Everyone, hope you're having a good day. Perhaps you've remember, or you certainly know, that the Bible in several places, Revelation and in Corinthians, tells us to come out of the world and be separate. So be separate from what? I think it occurs to me that it would be beneficial to just look at some of the things that are going on in the world to fully understand what we should come out of, what we should be separate from. We know that we're to be a light set up on a hill. We're supposed to stand out and be very different from those around us as Christians. Since this is a sermonette, we'll just look at one small aspect of life and see where we might come out and be different. And I'd like to look at the concept or the issue of keeping your vows, keeping your word. Are we men and women that do what we say we're going to do, or do we just blow it off? As I look at American society today, I see a society that is faithless. Consider, if you will, a couple of these items. When I look at the fact that in professional sports now, almost every year, you have people sitting out because, I'm not going to play. I'm worth a lot more than that. I need to renegotiate my contract. And it's become happenstance now that most NFL teams or baseball teams, they have policies now, we won't negotiate if you have more than 3 years left on your contract. But in essence, we've changed the verbiage, but what they're doing is they're breaking their word. They're breaking vows when they made a commitment. But it extends in every aspect of society. How many of you might have heard of building contractors that start a job, find out they underbid it, and say, I ain't going to finish this thing. In fact, it's so common now for big buildings, you have to have a bond. It's a performance bond. You actually have to buy insurance to prove that if you start this job and you walk out, then the bond company will come in and supply money to finish the job. Well, if they had been keeping their word, that wouldn't be necessary. There was a time, it seems to me, from what I read and talk to people, two generations ago, a man's word was his bond. Well, today they'd laugh at you if you told them, my guarantee is my word, and that's how you'll know I'll finish this construction job. Visa and MasterCharge, they actually process billions of dollars every year. And why are they so big, and why is there so much money in there? Because Visa and MasterCharge, they charge merchants that use those machines anywhere from 3 to 7%, depending on the type of charge it is. But merchants are willing to lose that amount of money off of the thing because the threat of bounced checks, people not following through on doing what they say, is so great that they gladly pay Visa or MasterCharge the money just to guarantee that they can at least get 93% of what they should be getting for the merchandise or the service. Now, what about all the divorces? You know, every year there's over 2 million divorces. Over 2 million people every year divorce. Well, marriage is a binding contract. It's a vow that you make with this other person and with God, that you will stay with them, you'll treat them a certain way. But we just discard it. In fact, we even call it no-fault divorce. In our society now, it's not even a problem. We don't even put a blame on it. Airlines, car rental companies, hotels, they all overbook routinely, sometimes as high as 40%, because they know a lot of people are going to renege on what they said. Another thing I find kind of interesting, if you look at bankruptcies, there's over 1 million bankruptcies every year filed. It's been going up ever since 1980. In 1980, there was 330,000. In the year 2000, there was 1,253,000 bankruptcies. But what makes this number even more amazing is all these bankruptcies are occurring at a time where we've had the greatest prosperity and boom, the greatest bull market that our country has ever seen, and some economists say the world has never seen prosperity like we've had over the last 20 years. And yet, all these bankruptcies are occurring. Bankruptcy is a nice way of saying this person has just lied and they're just welching on their debt. Their word is no good. So that's how the world is. But what is God's standards? Because we know that God's ways are not man's ways, and His standards are not our standards. And, you know, when I work, I do window cleaning, so I have a lot of mentally free time on my hands, so I listened to business stations. And in the last 3 years, all these financial and business stations, I hear people calling up, ask for advice, what should I do about this problem? And I'm about ready to go bankrupt. Well, I probably wouldn't have to, but was it better if I do that? But it might mess up my credit. Not once in 3 years have I heard someone actually ask the question, is it right? Is it proper? And they give advice like there's no disgrace in it. Oh, no, that's fine. It'll be better off for you. Just do that. Here's what you can do to keep all these assets that you acquired to rack up that debt. No conscience. It seems like America, they don't really care about whether or not they keep their word. They just want to know, is it legally enforceable? Can the courts make me do it? And how long do I have before I'll actually have to do this? So what are God's values? What are His standards? I think that's what's important for us to look at. If you would, please turn to Numbers 30. While you're turning to Numbers 30, we won't read the whole chapter, but it's a very interesting chapter. The whole chapter deals with vows, actually. But in Numbers 30, verse 2 is what I'd like to read today. In verse 2 it says, if a man vow a vow unto God, or swear an oath to bind his soul with a bond, he shall not break his word. He shall not break his word. He shall do according to all that proceeds out of his mouth. So I think in very plain English, very plain language, God is saying, if you make a vow, you better keep it. Don't break your word. Go to Deuteronomy 23. Deuteronomy 23, we find that God basically says the same thing. And there are many other scriptures we could go to. Sure enough, I didn't write down the verse. But anyway, there God basically says in Deuteronomy 23 that if you vow a vow, you better keep it and don't be slack to pay it. But it's not a sin if you don't vow the vow. It's not a problem if you don't make a vow, but if you do make a vow, you better pay it. And I think it's very important for us not to take the words that we say or the commitments we make lightly. There's a scripture that says that life and death are in the tongue. And, you know, we live in a legalistic society, and there are lawyers and that they specialize in contract law where they try to make it appear, imply that you'll do this, but they got all these loopholes to get out of it. But with God, there are no legal loopholes. There are no little technicalities that you can get out of a vow. Think back, if you will, in Judges 16. You know the story of Samson, and time wouldn't allow us to go through and read it, but you know how he fell in love with Delilah, and Delilah kept saying, tell me, where's your strength hidden? What's the secret to the strength? And over again, he'd tell her different things. Well, she kept after him, saying, tell me, if you really love me, tell me. Finally, he says, you know what? I'm a Nazarite, and there can't be a razor come to my hair, and there are other elements of the Nazarite vow. So once that was found out, then of course she cut his hair and he lost his strength, which came from God, so that was a sign of God leaving him. But it's interesting that Samson didn't cut his hair. But yet, you know, if he were alive today and went to court, I'm sure they would argue that he didn't break his vow. Well, he didn't cut his hair. But God doesn't reason the way man does. You know, God simply understood that he broke the spirit and the intent of that. He was supposed to keep that and do everything he could to do that. Instead, he shared the information. And God counted that as though he directly had broken that. There's also, if you will, I want to actually make a point. I see that the kids are still here and they're not gone to Sabbath school. Vows are very binding, and kids can even make vows, and God will hold you accountable. But there's an interesting thing in Numbers 30 as well, that if you tell your father the vow you made, and if he looks at it and says, you know, that's a foolish vow, he can disallow that vow. So even though you should be very sincere about following through on the things you say you're going to do, you can tell it to your parents, you can tell it to your father, and he can disavow it. And I think God just understood that sometimes kids don't have the maturity to understand the gravity of what they might be binding themselves to. Now in Psalm 15, verse 4, is a very interesting scripture. Here we're going to find that there's a characteristic that God looks for in a person. And it starts out in Psalms 15, It says, O Lord, at the very beginning it says, who shall abide in thy tabernacle? Who shall dwell in your holy hill? And then he goes through and he describes different types of person, this type of person. And then in the bottom part of verse 4, he says, he that swears to his own hurt and changes not. He that swears to his own hurt and changes not. I've got two modern day examples of this scripture in application. One was a electrical contractor who bid a job and got partway into the job and realized he had underbid it. This is back in, I think, the 40s. And right at the time he was in the middle of this, there was a copper shortage, and the price of his materials more than doubled. So on a $2,000 job, he was going to lose $1,200. This man went down to the bank, got a loan, and finished the job. He swore an oath to his own hurt and did not change. Another gentleman, this is more recent, he was an antique dealer. His name was Roy, and he had bought this desk that just looked exquisite, and he thought it might be a very early American piece. So he paid $400 for it, got it back to his shop, and he started inspecting it real closely. He found that the drawers were dovetailed, and that would mean that it couldn't be an 18th century desk. He was thinking it might have been a Jefferson desk, as they call them. And so he was a little disappointed, but he said, boy, this is just a fantastic copy, just a great replica. Well, about that time, a lady came in, and she fell in love with this desk. She said, oh, how much for that lovely desk? She said, well, I have to tell you, it's not an antique. She says, I don't care about that. She says, well, I have $400 into it. I'll be happy just to get my money out. She goes, oh, I'd love it. That's a great price. Let me give you some money right now, and I'll go get the rest of it and get something, you know, get a van to take it off. He says, oh, don't worry about it. Just give me your name and number, and I'll hold it for you until you come back with your money. Well, she leaves, and no sooner did she leave than some other antique dealers came into the store. One of them was really struck by this desk, started checking it out real closely. He goes, man, this is a fabulous desk. You must have got a great price for it. I see you got that hold tag on there. And Roy says, well, no, not really. He says, what do you mean? He says, I just got the $400 I put into it. He says, are you crazy? I'll give you $5,000 right now. He says, that's not an original. It's a copy. He says, no, I looked at it. The drawers have been reworked, but that desk is 18th century. In fact, it looks like one of those Jefferson desks. And right then, Roy realized he had made the mistake of assuming no one would dare tamper with an original. He went back and checked the desk, and it was literally a missing Jefferson desk that came from his mansion, and it had disappeared when the war between the states broke out. And it was worth $230,000. Well, that other dealer says, you're nuts if you sell that thing for... Well, did she give you any money? Do you got a written contract? That's not a sale, Roy. You take that desk and you sell it. There's no way in the world you'd catch me selling that thing for $400. Roy thought about it and said, you know, I gave her my word. And he sold her that desk for $400. That's someone who swore to his own hurt but didn't change. So I think it's interesting for us to ask ourselves the question, as society goes down this path of faithlessness, of not keeping their words, not keeping their promises, it's not good enough for us to be a little bit better than the world, because otherwise we wind up down in this cesspool. We wind up with no ethics, no values, and ultimately no character. But what we need to do is to have a standard that God has. You know, I've heard on Christian stations some people who have gone through bankruptcies. One guy, I heard his testimony, took him 20 years, even though the law of the land said he didn't have to pay it back. He took the approach that I made that debt, I made a vow, I'm going to pay it. It took him 20 years to go back and pay the creditors. I think that's a far better example. I think that is part of coming out of the world. And as our society goes down, we need to make sure we keep high standards. And one area that we can come out of the world and set an example is to keep our words, to let our yes be yes and our no be no.